Ellison, WRCO, Hank Bordowitz, who is the author of a couple of books we've been talking about on the air these days. And how are things for you today, Hank?
I'm great. Things are wonderful.
Excellent. First of all, the YouTube book. Have you always been a YouTube fan?
I've been a YouTube fan since, I guess, 1980, when I first got boy. Had to go up to Island Records on Madison Avenue back then, pick up a copy, listen to it, said I gotta see these guys, and they played the Palladium. It was their second gig. They began their tour and ended their first U.S. tour in New York City. They began it at a club called the Ritz. It was on 11th Street back then, and it held about 1,500 people. And they ended it at the Palladium, which had up until about a month before that been the Academy of Music on 14th Street, and that held about 3,500 people, give you an idea of how much they grew just in like the 2 months they were in America. And I saw them at the Palladium, and it was like, you know, what people must have felt like when they walked out of the Hammersmith in 1965 after seeing The Who. It was like, you know, a revelation. And joined this throng of dazed people walking up 14th Street at the end of the show. It was just amazing.
So right then you knew that this band was bound for greatness.
I had the idea. I mean, there have been a lot of bands I've seen that have been bound for greatness and never realized it for whatever reason. But so these guys certainly did.
What do you think set you two apart then?
Say what?
What do you think set them apart from other bands?
Well, judging from what I've, you know, researched and written now, ambition, and luck, and good management. Paul McGinnis is just an outstanding manager.
They were, of course, some of the early days of MTV. They had a few videos, too, that made them pretty famous here in America, too, didn't they?
A few. They were mostly an alternative radio band until probably The Unforgettable Fire.
Yeah.
You know, the first two albums were heavy on college radio, the then new wave radio stations, very short-lived format. And I remember that I Will Follow got a lot of play on MTV.
Don't remember that. I was thinking of maybe Pride in the Name of Love. And,
yeah, okay, yeah, that's The Unforgettable Fire. And that's,
sure.
Yeah, that, I mean, yeah, by then they had started to break pop, as they say.
Right. So what can you tell us about the book? How does this book stand up against maybe some other ones that have been written about the band?
Well, it's a very different kind of book. For one thing, it tracks the band from their first, when they won a Battle of the Bands in 1978. I found the article about that. And so it tracks them from that through playing the Super Bowl. And in the terms of the chronology, it, you know, covers all that ground. It's very objective because I'm not really the one writing it so much as I am editing and compiling it. It's a book of articles about the band.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called a reader.
So things you've collected through the years and things you've researched as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Think any members of U2 might read the book someday?
Well, keep saying, well, gotta stop that. Why are those out? Let's see. I ran into Bono at an event I was working at last March, just after I'd signed the contract for this. I guess it's a year ago March, so about a year and a half ago. And I also talked to Paul McGinnis at this event, and Paul told me, well, you know, when you're done with it, please send it on to me. And so as soon as I had a proof copy of it, I sent it to Paul McGinnis, and right now I know that they're working on their current, you know, their forthcoming album, and so I'm hoping that sooner or later they will at least, you know, skim it, make sure there's nothing libelous in it or something. You know. So all I need right now is to be sued by Paul McGinnis.
Yeah, you don't want that, I don't think so.
Well, again, I have there's mixed emotions about that. I mean, If we can make it a high-profile lawsuit, it will sell an awful lot of books.
Yeah.
I've talked to my lawyer about this, though, in terms of my previous book, because it was about a very litigious person. John Fogerty is a very litigious guy, and we were kind of balancing, you know, between well, do we irk this guy or are we fair? You know, do we want to spawn a lawsuit and sell a lot of books, or will paying, you know, will my legal fees outweigh the benefits of doing that?
So how do you just, you know, kind of run into Bono? I mean,
I'm very active in the music business in New York. I teach a course in it, and I was working a video crew. I was heading a video crew for the Nordoff Robbins music therapy charity event in Manhattan, and the honoree was Frank Barcelona of Premier Talent, or formerly of Premier Talent, who was Bono's booking agent and Bruce Springsteen's booking agent, and Bono and Bruce were going to give him the award. So, you know, the idea was to cover this. What happened was we were covering the door as people came in, interviewing them, asking them about Frank and, you know, the musicians and everything. And I was getting ready to move away from the door, and the cameraman looks at me and says, "No, I got a feeling something's going to happen soon. Why don't we just hang out here for a little bit?" And sure enough, about 5 minutes later, a limousine pulls up, and Bono steps out, right? You know, there's this crowd of people, autograph hounds, paparazzi, just standing there waiting for him. And he was surrounded by them. And, you know, my first instinct was to get security. And then looking at him, he said, "No, you know, he's having way too much fun." So I let him do that until he started kind of looking at the door and stuff. And then I called security over. And as he was walking out, I got to interview him, got to chat for a little bit on camera.
Wow. So is he an approachable guy?
Oh, yeah. He's a real salt-of-the-earth guy. I mean, you know, in that sort of a thing, in that sort of a setting. I don't know how he'd feel if you walked up to him on the street necessarily, but in Dublin, you know, that's SOP from what I hear.
Hmm.
And, you know, he has a house in New York now, or an apartment in New York. And New Yorkers are generally real, real cool about that sort of thing. But, you know, if you walked up to him and you weren't threatening and you were just being friendly, he would probably be friendly back unless, you know, it's a big intrusion.
I guess, in your opinion, what is the most interesting thing that you found out about the band from your research for the book?
Oh, man. The most interesting thing?
Yes.
Is that Adam and Larry regard themselves as the brains of the band.
Really?
Yeah. Bono, of course, regards them as the feet, but they regard themselves as the brains.
Huh. Okay. What do you feel the band's greatest accomplishment has been during the past years they've been together?
Surviving intact for 25 years. That's a major coup. I mean, how many bands can you think of that have done that?
Not many. The Four Tops, maybe.
They've even had some personnel changes.
Lately, yes, I think they did. So, but you're right. I guess from what you know, are they friends? Do they get along pretty well?
I think one of the biggest points they tried to make very early on in the band was that they were friends even before they started playing together. You know, that this was a band built on friendship.
Mm-hmm. How can people get a hold of the book if they like, Hank?
Well, they can go to Barnes & Noble. Most of them have it. If they don't have it, they can order it off of Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or any of the other .com internet book sites. If you can't find it, you should call Hal Leonard and tell them immediately. That's my publisher, and they will make sure that the stores have it.
And it's just kind of like a scrapbook of the band and the things they've done in the past 25 years, isn't it?
It's a book of articles. It's not so much a scrapbook, because a scrapbook, you know, means pictures, and there's no pictures in this book, except for the very nice one on the cover. But it covers the band very completely in terms of articles. As I said, from, you know, day one till, you know, end of 2000, and, you know, beginning of 2002, covers how the band is managed, how they do business, how their peers see them. Have interviews with, you know, have rather articles by Salman Rushdie and Bruce Hornsby and Billy Corgan in there. And so I try to be very, very complete and exhaustive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've done a great job with that. The other book you touched on, Creedence Clearwater Revival, how long has that book been out?
That book's been out, my son's 4.5 years old, so that book's been out 4.5 years because it came out the day before he was born.
Oh, okay.
It's a good way of keeping track.
That was an eventful year in your life, then, I guess.
An eventful few days, yeah.
You bet. So is that book still available in some of these
Oh,
watching?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's going into its third printing.
Well, it's been very successful then, hasn't it?
And maybe they'll get the cover right this time.
Oh, okay.
Because the cover has said, Bad Moon Rising, the unofficial history of Creedence Clearwater Revival, but the copyright reads, Bad Moon Rising, the unauthorized history of Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I've never liked the word unofficial. It makes it sound like a work of fiction.
Oh.
The unauthorized came because I interviewed Bob Fogarty for this, which is who's John and Tom's brother, and he works for John. He's kind of his aide-de-camp. And Bob said that it would probably be better if I called it unauthorized and made that clear on the cover, because otherwise John would be very, very upset. This was when I had that conversation with my lawyer.
Oh, yeah. And so did he get upset, or do you know?
I heard third hand from somebody who talked to Bob that John actually thought it was fair. That's what I've heard. I've never heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Stu Cook and Doug Clifford, you know, feel that it was fair and dealt with the issues even-handedly.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think that I, you know, did a good journalistic job, you know, that I maintained my integrity, even though John, you know, was very, very reluctant and ultimately did not contribute firsthand to the project.
Mm-hmm. What made CCR a successful band?
Oh, man, there are a lot of elements. I mean, there's no one element that makes a band successful. CCR had a great rhythm section. That's primary. They had this great rhythm section that was weaned on Booker T and the MGs. Then they had John Fogarty, who just wrote these tremendous songs. I mean, he was a great songwriter. You know, there's no getting around songs like, you know, Proud Mary, Up Around the Bend, Bad Moon Rising. They're just tremendous songs.
Mm-hmm. They were kind of unique to that era, too, weren't they? I mean, they didn't sound like a lot of other things around the radio.
That's true, but they're also pretty timeless.
Right.
You know, which is their greatest strength, I think. I mean, my kids still love Creedence Clearwater Revival. And that's, you know, without Daddy having written a book about them.
I guess, unlike you two, they didn't get along that well, it doesn't seem like, huh?
Oh. Depends on, you know, what you mean by they. Doug and Stu still get along famously. On the other hand, John doesn't seem to have gotten along with very much anyone, even his brother towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
He refused to see his brother for years and years while his brother was dying. It's one of the ugliest portions of the book. It's not a pretty book.
Right.
You know, I asked a friend of mine who writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, who was there at the time, you know, why he never wrote the book. And he said, I just never had the urge to write the rock and roll version of Bleak House. It just never appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down and spend so much time on such a tragic story.
It was. Well, a lot of their problems kind of dealt with record companies and management, too, didn't it?
Some of them, or lack of management. They never had a manager.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, John was always their manager. They had some, you know, people who handled the various aspects of their business. A guy named Jake Rohr, who did talk to me about, you know, for the book, and I still keep in touch with Jake. Bruce Young, who is still very bitter about those years and didn't talk to me. I mean, on the record, we spoke briefly. Long enough for him to say he wasn't willing to talk to me on the record. And, yeah, they had people who took care of some stuff for them, but mostly John took care of things. John, even today from what I hear, is a bit of a control freak.
Mm-hmm. And Stu and Doug still tour a little bit as a Creedence band or cover band or something, don't they?
Stu and Doug still tour probably 150, you know, nights a year as Creedence Clearwater Revisited, with Elliot Easton from the Cars on guitar, and a guy from a band from California called The People that had a hit even before Creedence did, John Tristeo on vocals. And they do a good job. It's interesting, because I went to see both bands a number of times. John was touring while I was writing the book as well. And seeing John made the small hairs on the back of your neck stand up. I mean, it was that good and that moving. Seeing Creedence Clearwater Revisited, everyone in the audience was dancing. You know, so that was an essential difference between the two organizations at the time. That they could both tour successfully at the same time was, you know, pretty cool also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, they were through this town, and a lot of people said, well, I don't know if I want to go see them without John, but it certainly was a good show from everybody that came back and told us that at the station here.
Yeah, they put on a great show, and, I mean, you know, Elliot is just a tremendous guitarist.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. So what's in your future? What are you working on right now?
I currently have on the VDT before me a book called Turning Points of Rock and Roll, which basically covers everything from Edison to MP3s. And come this June, I have a book coming out called The Bruce Springsteen Scrapbook. This book is indeed a scrapbook with about 150 pictures. And a very, very, you know, exhaustive biography of Bruce.
Awesome. You're putting out music, books on, you know, I guess my favorite music people of all time, so I salute you on that.
Mine too.
This must be a fun job.
Well, if it weren't for money, I would be like three of the happiest people you know.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And again, how can people get a hold of your books, the ones we've talked about?
The books are generally available. They're in print. They should be at your local bookstore, at least the bigger ones. Ask for them by name.
Excellent. You've been a great guest, Hank. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Phil.